Sit back, relax, and enjoy as Don Tony gives you news and reviews from AEW, NXT, and indie wrestling too.
Know what's happening in the world of wrestling without the hate and clickbait.
It's Wednesday night, Dawn-o-mite.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
Other than Marina Shafir, am I the only one that has a Roderick Strong cert? Roderick Strong, tonight on AEW, made his debut, coming to the save of Adam Cole. And if you tuned into yesterday's episode of the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show, yes, we did a WWE draft preview predictions last night. It is on DonTony.com right now. We recommend you check it out because we got into some very interesting conversation. But if you heard that predictions episode yesterday, yeah, a little cooked sausage about Roderick Strong. I'm surprised that so many people were not aware that he was gone. Yeah, that's actually been a little while now. Yeah, WWE hasn't taken him down on their profile page yet. You know, it's not necessarily like super urgent, but he is now part of AEW. Loved Ricky Starks on Dynamite tonight. Oops. Loved Jay White. That push. You know, he's in. Oops. Powerhouse Hobbs regulated back to skits. Oops. Yeah, that's what happens when you don't have that much TV going on. But hey, maybe AEW does need a third show. It's going to happen sooner than we think. AEW Collision. One thing that we definitely have to keep reminding everybody of, which you will realize is bullshit. You will realize it is bullshit in no time. I mean, we obviously have to wait. And people are going to eat their words. And you know what? Just like the Mercedes Moné AEW stuff, just like all the fake news that you've been fed, especially over the last year, people won't care. They'll just sweep it under the rug. They'll just act like they never said it. Just like Mercedes Moné with the contract extension last week. Signed a contract extension. Yeah, she's about to be a free agent. That's credit to Fightful, by the way. You will realize that this Saturday AEW Collision show is not going to be a show where all the supporters of CM Punk get to play and neutral people get to play. You will see very quickly that that is so far from the case. And, yeah, as time goes by, we will see that. We'll definitely talk a little bit about CM Punk tonight because there is some news. A meeting that he had last week, actually, with AEW and Chris Jericho and a few others. We'll also shoot down some clickbait, some fake news about his meeting with WWE personnel on Monday. And, you know, what I want to get out of the way right now, just because you know people are going to tease it. You know people are going to use it to try to get attention. Tonight on AEW Dynamite, we had once again another announcement from Tony Khan. We will hear from Tony Khan. You know, now, yes, there's no major announcement in this clip, so maybe some people really over-exaggerated what they thought this announcement was going to be. And Tony Khan did appear, and he announced the return of the Owen Hart the Owen Hart Foundation Memorial Tournament. Sure, Bret Hart on the heels of trashing AEW and their style a little bit. You know, Bret Hart a little surprised that Martha Hart would be part of something like this, that this is returning once again. Now, where is this a rumor killer? Oh, I'll tell you in a second. First of all, the details that we know as of right now as far as the return of the Owen Hart Memorial Foundation Tournament Cup is that the opening ceremony, whatever that means, the opening ceremony is going to take place at Double or Nothing. That's probably where we'll see Martha Hart. We'll probably see, you know, some updated designs from last year. So that will happen at Double or Nothing. tournament will be held in Canada, and New Japan will have something to do with this, especially with Owen Hart's early career working in Japan. It'll also involve Forbidden Door and the finals. And here's where the rumor killer, we can get this out of the way now. The finals will take place on July 15th in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where Owen Hart is obviously from. Now, I've already seen a hell of a lot of people already teasing you with this, and let's get this out of the way. July 15th, where the finals will be in Calgary, is a Saturday. See where I'm going with this? People are already teasing that this will be an episode of AEW Collision. And as a result, that makes it quite interesting, especially under the circumstances as far as who would be appearing on AEW Collision. Well, I want to throw this out there right away. No clickbait, no teasing, no, you know, bullshit headline just to get attention. July 15th's AEW event. That doesn't look good. This looks better. Okay, little black background. You remember when they announced House Rules? Their version of their house shows? Well, a lot of people seem to have gotten amnesia suddenly that one of the house shows that they're going to be doing is Saturday, July 15th. Oh, look, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, at the Saddle Dome, and tickets have been on sale for quite some time. So that is where the finals are going to take place. Personally, I think some of this will be televised. This will be televised. I seriously doubt Bret Hart will show up. Mike, especially with Martha Hart being there, no. I know that's a popcorn-eating moment to see Bret Hart and Martha Hart on the same screen together, but no, that's not the case. The only way you would see them together on a screen is if somebody made a thumbnail. They will not be in the same vicinity. But look, that's what the announcement was tonight. And, you know, look, it's a nice thing to do. AEW, very generous towards the Owen Hart Foundation. And even though a lot of us out there are still disappointed at Martha Hart absolutely refusing to allow WWE in any capacity to celebrate Owen Hart a little bit more, I would think WWE in a second would make a generous contribution to the Owen Hart Foundation. Yet, you know, it's okay. Listen, I cannot throw any shade to Martha Hart. She lost her husband to a tragedy. And I don't know what that feels like. And I don't want to know what that feels like. So because of that in itself, however she feels with animosity towards Vince and WWE, yeah, I can't question it. I can't fight it. You know, maybe once Vince is long gone, maybe that relationship mends a little bit. I don't know. All I know is that I remember when that went down, and that's one of those where were you moments, believe me. Still, I remember chills repeatedly with that night. And that was very early on with me doing hotlines. You know, covering that on a hotline was not very pleasant. Although, and I have the clip still, when Matt Zombie tried to, like, you know, lighten the mood by saying, wow, you know, how ironic that the name of the event was called Over the Edge. I still have that clip. And, yeah, we don't play it much anymore. So, but, hey, Foundation Tournament coming back for a second year. All right. Now, in case you want to be refreshed. Now, I don't have the women's brackets in front of me because I was just checking it out. This was 1 year ago. What the Owen Hart men's tournament was. And does anybody out there, just for a shout out, first person that gets it right, I'll shout you out on the chat room. Does anybody remember who the Joker was on the men's side and the woman's side? Who were the Jokers that appeared in those tournaments? Very curious if anybody remembers. I'll tell you, one I did remember. The other one I completely forgot. Totally forgot. And LeDude, yeah, props to LeDude. He got it. John Morrison, you know, Johnny Nitro, Johnny Impact, Johnny Elite, and Maki Ito. Totally forgot about Maki Ito being in that tournament. But, hey, it's for a good cause. So we really can't rip it all that much. All right. We'll get a briefly run down Dynamite tonight. We'll run down a little bit of NXT Spring Break, and we'll give you a little injury update to Indy Hartwell. It looks like that she dodged a big bullet yesterday. Spring Break was fun. It was fun. It's interesting because Monday I said if their rating is anywhere under 650,000 viewers, that would be a big disappointment. They did 647. So I think it's close enough to say that it's an okay rating given the fact that last week was 565,000. But it looks like Bron Breakker will stick around for a few more weeks. Might even do some double duty once the draft is over with. And as Kevin and I said yesterday on the draft episode that we recorded, you know, Bron Breakker doing the heel role right now, and he is killing it. Now he's doing his Steiner recliner on top of it. But he went at it with Carmelo Hayes for a little while yesterday. There was some people that were really concerned about Grayson Waller. He might have gotten seriously injured yesterday. But that was designed to put the focus on Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker. And that also put the focus as far as why Grayson Waller did not get involved in the post-match beatdown. Teasing an injury, you know, will get him added away quickly. Personally, I think Grayson Waller is main roster bound. I think Grayson Waller might leapfrog fucking everybody in NXT and make maybe the earliest, biggest impact on that main roster amongst NXT stars go. But not a bad episode yesterday. You know what? Since I have it queued up, I might as well show it to you. The women's match main evented last night's NXT. The match was very clunky. I keep reminding myself that this is developmental. I keep reminding myself how fast Tiffany Stratton has gone in over the last year. She just in an interview with Busted Open and just openly admitted, like, look, I think I'd rather stay in NXT a little bit longer because I still have a lot of seasoning to do, a lot of improvements to do. You know, in this day and age, it shouldn't be that out of the ordinary to hear somebody who's up and coming talk like that. You know, yes, she's very conceited, very cocky. Her character is very conceited and cocky. But for her to be that open about it and just say, look, you know, I'd love to go to the main roster, but I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I need to do more. I think she wants the women's championship as part of her resume under her belt before she goes to the main roster. But, you know, you got to keep reminding yourself that you're watching developmental. You're watching people develop right before your very eyes that had no wrestling career before this. You know, so when people got a kick out of that move, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen the little, you know, video clips all over social media today of Roxanne Perez, you know, like doing a move off the top rope, and, you know, Indy Hartwell and Tiffany Stratton are supposed to like fall over as well, almost like an arm drag, double arm drag takedown. And if you look at it closely, Roxanne Perez was the one at fault for that, because when you execute that move, you're supposed to totally fall backwards on your ass, and the momentum of you falling backwards is supposed to carry your opponents to fall backwards as well. And Roxanne Perez did not do that. But again, it's developmental. Some people immediately, especially AEW hardcore whack jobs out there, oh, you see, you always talk about, you know, botches in AEW. Here, look at this. Well, you know what? I don't consider Dynamite developmental, you know. And look, tonight on Dynamite, we had Jade Cargill successfully defend her TBS championship against Taya Valkyrie. And, you know, a lot of people, I mean, let's be honest, how did anybody in their right mind think there was going to be any other outcome? Seriously. I mean, yeah, we've had some DQs and countouts lately with the four pillars, but that storyline, that's not becoming the norm in AEW. But there was no other outcome today, and Jade Cargill was going to retain. But that match kind of, you know, exposed a little bit of Jade Cargill as well. She could be 156-0. She is still so far away from being considered, you know, like a legitimate threat. And the fact that you have all these polished, look at the storyline with the Outcast. Look at the storyline with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter and others. And none of them ever bring up Jade Cargill. It's obviously not their fault. That's storyline. You know, it's completely storyline. People need to remember that. Like tonight, I'll give you another example. Tonight, Orange Cassidy successfully defended the International Championship against Bandido. And the match was great. And something that caught my eye during that match, and we'll segue into MJF's tweet and delete that happened yesterday. There's a bigger story than you think. And I'm actually going to take a different twist on it and say that MJF's comments may be a little bit misdirected, something that, you know, no one out there is taking that side of. But Orange Cassidy put on a good performance tonight. The crowd was into it. Crowd loved it. But there was something tonight about Bandido. Bandido, much more ground game, much more gaga, a little bit of psychology involved. Bandito's still doing Bandito, but nowhere near what you normally see with Bandito doing on matches. And I think it was Shivani that made the remark that said that Bandito is being a little bit more deliberate tonight during this match. A little more deliberate. Now, I don't attribute that to Orange Cassidy, because Orange Cassidy has had some great matches with some high flyers, and they still do their insane shit. But remember that word deliberate, because that might be a word that you might hear brought up more and more in AEW. And you might attribute part of that to MJF's tweet and delete from yesterday. We'll bring that up in a moment. But getting back to my point with Orange Cassidy and perception and smoke and mirrors and everything else, I saw a lot of people tonight saying, you know what? Orange Cassidy's current reign is one of the best AEW title reigns in recent memory. You know, he is, you know, successfully defended it 20 plus times. The matches are very good. But I need to remind everyone out there, you know, when people were shitting on Wardlow squashing Matthew A. Ratz tonight, Mataratz, Wardlow, you know, defeating Hobbs, who had a shit run, let's be honest with it. You look at other titles, you know, the reason why Orange Cassidy's title reign is getting so much praise and respect is because Tony Khan is not playing hot potato and whatever toy he feels like playing with at the moment. We thought finally he's going to put some investment in Hobbs, and then here comes Luchasaurus. Hey, I resolved the problem with that fucking comic book company, whatever it was, about the mask. I don't remember. I don't give a shit. So now Tony Khan's like, no, we got to do Wardlow and Luchasaurus. So Hobbs is now back to doing QTV vignettes. This time he's not happy with QT Marshall. Let's go to Plan B. You know, let's not. Nobody gives a shit. You look at some other wrestlers. You look at some of the chat. Look at FTR. FTR beat the Guns a month ago. And yes, it did the lowest rating of the entire night, quarter that night. But have they really, like, had any title defenses? Are there any momentum? No, we're now delegated to singles matches. Tonight, Dax loses to Jeff Jarrett. And on Friday, you got Cash Wheeler taking on Jay Lethal. Didn't Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal already, like, get title shots recently? But this is what they're doing. All these other title reigns, if you really dissect it and if you're really honest with yourself, that's the reason why Orange Cassidy's reign looks so impressive. And Jay Cargill's might be the next one that's impressive, because that's featured on TV almost every week. And you allow someone to develop a reign, of course people are going to put a little merit into it. You know, when you see titles getting hot potatoed, how else are you supposed to feel? Jamie Hayter, I think the reason why there's not as much respect, and I don't mean disrespect against Jamie Hayter, but I mean as far as her championship, is number one because of all the overshadowing due to Thunder Rosa being the champion and Jamie Hayter being the interim champion, and that's all on Tony Khan because Thunder Rosa was willing to surrender the title. And the second thing is that, you know, if you pay very close attention, has Jamie Hayter cut a promo by herself in the last 2 months? It's usually Britt Baker is the one that's talking. Jamie Hayter gets to say something here and there, just like tonight. But Jamie Hayter is not the focus of a lot of this. And I think that, as a result, makes her almost like an afterthought. So, all right. So, and look, Orange Cassidy, Bandido signed a respect after the match, which was good. They would come into play a little bit later with regards to Adam Cole. You know, that's not the 2023 version of the Undisputed Era, because Kyle O'Reilly, unfortunately, is still out with his neck issues. And with all due respect, yeah, where's the lie? I don't think anybody wants to see him back in AEW. I don't think anybody wants to see Bobby Fish back. I'm nothing against Bobby Fish personally, but, you know, what's going to happen? He's going to be appearing on Dynamite. He will not be on AEW Collision because of his, you know, relationship with CM Punk. So, you know, Adam Cole tonight, and even more, if you really think about it, you had Adam Cole come out almost to the aid of Keith Lee a couple of weeks ago. Remember the stare down with Adam Cole and Chris Jericho, or Chris Jericho first towards Adam Cole? And the following week, you got Adam Cole and the confrontation with Jericho, and then you had the handcuff incident and everything. And I'm saying to myself, where's the big motherfucker? As Rick Ross said, you a big motherfucker. How does Keith Lee suddenly, he gets a cinder block over his chest, disappears, comes back, is somehow interacting with Adam Cole, and people are immediately flashing back, oh, you see, WWE wanted Adam Cole to be a manager for Keith Lee, the Bearcat. Rawr! And look, AEW is now doing it the right way. Oh, yeah? What's the tag team called now? They are now called Naturally Limitless. Keith Lee is now teaming up with Dustin Rhodes on Rampage. Naturally Limitless. Sounds like a cereal. It's Naturally Limitless. You know, like, what happened to the Swerve storyline? What happened to the relationship? Adam Cole calls out Chris Jericho tonight. Chris, if you don't come out, I'm going to go find you. Jericho doesn't come out. Jericho calls Adam Cole a coward for not saving his love last week, you know, from the beatdown. So Jericho sends out the Jericho Appreciation Society. So you got 2.0, Danny Garcia, Jake Hager all beating down Adam Cole. And now I'm saying to myself, oh, let's see who's going to make the save. Let's see who's going to make the save. Maybe Ricky Starks. Maybe they'll, you know, do a little damage control. Maybe Keith Lee, the Bearcat. Arr! Save Adam Cole. No. Orange Cassidy and Bandido come out. At least they weren't wearing sunglasses. They try to make the save, and they get instantly beat down as well. And then Roddy shows up, and he somehow cleans house. And next week, we're going to have Roderick Strong, Adam Cole, Orange Cassidy, and Bandido taking on the Jericho Appreciation Society. You know, I don't really have too much of a problem with the match, but the fuck ever happened with Keith Lee out of all of this? You know, people are going to nitpick about WWE stuff. I think we have to call out some of this ridiculousness with AEW as well. I thought this was stupid, to be honest with you. We had Jungle Boy Jack Perry and Darby Allin in the back. They're cutting a promo. Darby kind of like wants to clear the air for going a little overboard last week and stuff that they said. Darby's got a match against Sammy Guevara tonight. The winner of that match takes on MJF at Double or Nothing. And as we said 2 weeks ago, this was the AEW scenic route. It's a scenic route. It's not hard to figure out. I mean, most of this stuff is very easy to figure out. It's just people try to be melodramatic about it. So they could have 9 conversations about something where if you just say it once, you know, conversation over. So, but the segment tonight with Jack Perry and Darby Allin was very, very odd. I mean, if you smoked a little babanya, maybe it kind of like was a little bit of a better segment. And the reason why I say that is Darby Allin makes a remark and says something. I think the words were, to Jungle Boy, if you care about this pillar stuff at all, you have my back tonight. Why? Why? If you care about this pillar stuff at all, you should have my back tonight. Why? What the fuck happened to Sting? Like, why does he have to have you back? He didn't have his back. And Darby Allin ended up getting disqualified. Little Eddie Guerrero tonight. People didn't pay attention. So Jungle Boy says that he wishes tonight would have been him versus Darby Allin instead of Sammy Guevara versus Darby Allin. And then Darby, with a quick comeback, he says, yeah, I wish it was too, because I would have beat your ass tonight. I'm like, I don't want to use the B word, but, you know, this part of the word rhymes with molar. It's like, you know, we got multiple personality disorders during this segment. If you actually listen to it closely and you just follow it, you're like, none of it really made sense. And in the end, Jack Perry didn't even come out. He didn't even come out. So Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin, they have a decent match tonight. And then we'll segue into MJF in a moment with his tweet and delete. But I had to bring up this match first. So they have the match tonight. Doesn't close out the show, because you know the ending is going to be the Blackpool Combat Club and the Elite. It was set up earlier when John Moxley nailed RJ City, which I'm sure there's 1,000 people out there that are probably like, who? So they were looking for the Elite tonight. So you knew that was the main event. But Sammy takes on Darby Allin. And, you know, the match is everything that was against what MJF tweeted and deleted yesterday. And that's the reason why he tweeted and deleted it. We'll get into it in a moment. But there was one point where Sammy Guevara did a 630 to the outside onto Darby Allin through a table. And the crowd is chanting, holy shit, holy shit. Close-ups on everybody's faces looking shocked, amazed, unbelievable. And what ends up happening a little bit later on is, with the referee distracted, MJF, he gets the skateboard of Darby Allin. And Sammy Guevara ends up with the skateboard. Sammy Guevara falls to the floor, and he throws the skateboard to Darby Allin. The referee turns around. Didn't see the shot, but he sees Sammy Guevara laid out on the mat. He sees Darby Allin holding the skateboard, and it's kind of like vintage, you know, Los Guerreros. The referee calls for the bell. Darby Allin gets disqualified. Then we get a post-match beatdown, and now Jungle Boy tries to make the save with a chair. So now you're saying to yourself, okay, and we talked about it last week, that Tony Khan is going to be the one, you know, righting the wrong of the MJF fuckery. But the interesting thing about it is, like, he'll read a teleprompter and make announcements, or he'll make an announcement and pass the buck to somebody else. But as far as decision-making, you know, I'm sorry. I love Tony Schiavone as a commentator. I, since day one, enjoyed his AEW stuff. I've always defended it. But to have a commentator calling MJF a prick and making the announcement for Tony Khan that next week there's going to be a tag team match between MJF and Sammy versus Darby and Jack Perry, and if Sammy and MJF win, then they will still have the one-on-one match at Double or Nothing. But if Darby and Jack Perry win next week, they will be added, and it'll be a Four Pillars championship match. We know all along that's what the plan was. So it's the scenic route. But, you know, to have Tony Khan through a commentator and a commentator calling MJF a prick, I don't know. To me, it's they need a figurehead. I mean, I know early on they were so against having a figurehead, an authority figure. Why not? Tony Khan making the decisions, he's an authority figure. Is Tony Khan that petty that all the decisions have to be made by him and just someone else makes the announcement for him? Because believe it or not, as ridiculously childish as that sounds, no, that actually may be the truth. I don't think Tony Khan wants the perception that anybody else in that company has authority to make something, change something, announce something, take something away, manipulate something, tweak something. Like, everything has got to be him or nothing. I would have loved William Regal as an authority figure. I think this many people you could put in that position. Shit, I would have fun with Sting being an authority figure. There's many people you could put in that role. But, you know, just this having an announcer, commentator, you know, make after a while, it's kind of caca. So Jeff Jarrett beats Dax Harwood. Sonjay Dutt tried to interfere a little bit, enough to distract Dax Harwood. He ends up eating the stroke. And as a result, Jeff Jarrett gets the win. Like I said, on Rampage Friday, which has a special start time at 5:30 p.m., Cash Wheeler will be taking on Jay Lethal. So, you know, if Cash Wheeler loses, then you kind of almost feel like we're getting that again, FTR versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. And I will say this, man. I criticize Jeff Jarrett a lot over the years. But the fact that he could still hang as much as he does at that age, that's impressive. That's impressive. He doesn't look like a sad old man out there. He actually still puts on a good enough performance, and that's pretty cool. I mean, sure, I preferred that he did not defeat Dax Harwood tonight. You know, the Acclaimed, let's be honest and see where that's gone. Look at the Guns over the last month. Say what you want. Whoa, no, the Ring of Honor. You're like, you know, you can't keep playing a musical chairs like that, because once, especially when someone has momentum, the Guns, even though they should have never won those tag titles, the Guns had momentum. And as soon as they lost that match with FTR, all their momentum was killed. The Acclaimed, you know, they still have popularity, no question. But you look at those ratings, and they have been responsible for some of the lowest ratings on their shows. That's because fans are not as interested as they used to be. Sometimes, you know, that phrase, if it's not broken, don't try to fix it. You know, it feels more than anything like, you know, you get bored. You know, I think it's the case creatively for Tony Khan. You get bored. You play a game. Oh, I got the latest game. I play it for 2 or 3 weeks. Then I put it on the shelf and I play a new game for 2 or 3 weeks. Or, you know, you go on OnlyFans and you follow some chick or some guy. And you're kind of like, oh, my God, this person's amazing, unbelievable, and you're contributing money. And then you're like, that's the excitement du jour for the day of the week or the month. And then after that, you kind of get like a little bit complacent, a little tired, like, ah, let me move on to something else. I mean, that's what it feels like. It feels like after a couple of weeks, you lose interest. Something about Orange Cassidy, though. Something about Orange Cassidy. Let's be honest. Something about Orange Cassidy. Ty Mello got involved a little bit during the match with Guevara and Darby Allin. MJF was on commentary as well. Jade Cargill beats Taya Valkyrie, as we said earlier. Fruit roll-up. Did not make Jade look all that great in this match, but the way she got the win, I'm fine with. Because it felt like she squeaked out a victory. I mean, there was no question who was going to win in that match. But her winning without doing Jaded as a finisher, that actually, to me, is a consolation. Look, people are not thrilled how abruptly halted Taya Valkyrie is right now. But was there ever a change? You know, a few people were bringing up to me today. I thought it was cute looking back on it. I think it's enough time now that we can look back on it and laugh a little bit. Do you remember when Action Andretti made his Dynamite debut and lost to Chris Jericho? And people were calling it that we're going to look back at this. This is going to be the ruthless aggression, the John Cena moment when he confronted Kurt Angle. And now we're, what, 2-3 months later? Do I need to say anything else? Let's be honest. And look, I like Action Andretti. I gave everybody a little bit of a history lesson because his name is actually quite familiar in my neck of the woods. But you look 2 months later, and you're like, okay, yeah, let's be a little honest here. And the main event tonight, you know, and I'm going to say something that might piss off some people. Kinosuke, Takeshita, and Kenny Omega beat the Butcher and the Blade. After the match is over, Blackpool Combat Club, Brian Danielson, they come out. They're impressed and everything, and they have a little bit of a back-and-forth beatdown, and Takeshita, you know, if you watch the skits online, honorary member of the Elite and all this stuff. But why is it that when someone is Japanese, AEW is not, they are far from guilty of this. WWE has done it more than anything. How come whenever a foreigner, someone who's not currently a United States citizen, someone that comes from Japan, somebody comes from Mexico, two countries, for example, and they have to be in a ring and look like they're mentally deficient? Is that a safe word to say in 2023? Because the Blackpool Combat Club, they're cutting a promo, oh, you know, you should be part of the Blackpool Combat Club, just like Cody Rhodes should be part of Judgment Day. Takeshka should be part of the Blackpool Combat Club. And he's looking around, and it's almost like a tourist, like in Spanish Harlem or in the Bronx, and looking around, like suddenly he becomes like a vegetable. Like he doesn't know what's going on, and he looks all confused. Confused. The fuck is there to be confused about? The Elite just got the shit knocked out of him. You had the match with Kenny Omega. You're in the locker room. You're in the middle of the ring at the Blackpool Combat Club, and they're saying, oh, you should join us. And he's looking confused, like, no, me no speak English. Me no understand what you talk about. It happens more than you realize. It happens in WWE as well. So ultimately, Takeshka gets a nut shot, and he gets beat down, and we go off the air. We didn't see the blood. Takeshka does like the blade, by the way. And John Moxley has the screwdriver, and he's going to use it. And he's jabbing on Takeshka, and we go off the air. So, I don't know. I'd be honest with you. You know, you look at the ratings the last couple of weeks, they've been consistently in the mid-8s. Can they break 9 again? Absolutely. You know, AEW is not a shit show. But honestly, I think tonight's episode was quite passable. I think it was. I don't mind the DQ. I didn't mind the count out last week. You know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. But I'm going to segue into something now that is a very serious conversation. And I commend MJF for saying it yesterday. It's sad that he had to delete it. But in this day and age of social media, nothing is ever deleted. He wrote something yesterday that is getting a lot of traction right now, and it's something to seriously think about. But I think the reason why he deleted it, see, what people need to understand, and I'm one of MJF's biggest fans. Shit, I'm willing to give the guy a fucking $500 Piper shirt for nothing. That's how stupid I am, you know, if he wanted it. MJF, what I love about him, he's so old school that wherever he's in public, he eats, sleeps, lives, shits his gimmick 24/7, 365. The guy, no matter who he's around, where he's at, that guy does it. That's why that photo by that asshole that used to coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars during that stadium stampede match, when that asshole posted that photo online, I already know how the sausage is made. I don't need to see it. I know how magicians do their magic acts. I don't need somebody to show it to me. When I was a kid, I eventually learned that pro wrestling was scripted. I don't need my Uncle Joe to slow it down and, you know, show it to me and almost tormented, thrown in my face that what I'm watching is fake, as they used to call it. By the way, shout out to my grandmother. Today is the 32-year anniversary that she passed away. She died in 1991 on this day. I would not be doing this show right now if it wasn't for my grandmother. She is the one that got me into wrestling. She is the one, when I was 8 years old and she used to babysit me, she would let me stay up at midnight to watch something I never heard of before, and it was called pro wrestling. And when my mom yelled at my grandmother when I was a kid, when my mom yelled at my grandmother, why are you letting them watch that? Why are you letting them stay up that late? I knew that I had to watch more of it. And I've been hooked as a wrestling fan ever since. And it was my grandmother that got me into pro wrestling. Today is the anniversary of her passing away. I miss her dearly. You would have loved my grandmother. You would have loved my grandmother. So getting back to what I was saying with the MJF stuff, you know, MJF eats, sleeps, lives his character, and sometimes it trickles into real life. That's where you got to be a little careful. I think Hulk Hogan learned that in court. All right, that was Hulk Hogan doing what he was doing. That wasn't Terry Bollea. That was Hulk Hogan. Yeah, that's when you hit Bizarro Land. But the thing with MJF is, you know, he's not so special and demanding that he could fucking do whatever he goddamn pleases. He could show up whenever he wants, leave whenever he wants. He could say horrible stuff to Tony Khan. He could, you know, walk by his flower bed and kick all of the petals off of the flowers. You know, MJF still has to follow rules, but he does what he does so good, and he is so committed doing it that you get this impression, like the loose cannon Brian Pillman back in the day. Roddy Piper obviously is MJF's idol, his inspiration, mostly coming into wrestling. But to me, MJF reminds me more of Brian Pillman when he was the loose cannon. Because you honestly, listen, when I met Brian Pillman in 1990, was it eight? No, it was 1996. Yeah, I think it was 1996. When I met him in 1996, you know, like, he was cool. And he was very, very reserved. Very quiet. I met him at a restaurant in Philly. But he was so quiet. Something felt really strange about him. And there were people there that, you know, like, yo, man, something ain't right here. It's something wrong here. This was right before he had his Hummer accident. But the point is, with MJF, he still has rules to follow. And he can't just say what he wants to say without it upsetting some people. Whether it's friends, whether it's management, whether it's his fellow compadres in pro wrestling. And MJF wrote something yesterday on Twitter that, on the surface, I think 98% of us out there will agree with what he said. I'm going to take a little twist on it and criticize him for something, but he said something yesterday. Now, I want you to think about who in AEW, who in New Japan, who in GCW, who in a lot of these other promotions, who this applies to. Listen, for my audio only friends, I'm going to read it. It's very quick. Very powerful. He wrote this and then deleted it not too long afterwards. MJF said, and I quote, "The more wrestling fans become bloodthirst for these dangerous feats in the ring, the more the wrestlers will hurt themselves trying to curry fans' favor. Wrestlers, the fans don't understand that any given point we can be paralyzed from the neck down or even die from a maneuver as simple as a body slam. By the way fans reading this, body slams hurt. Every move hurts. They will keep moving the goalpost of what they deem is good. So before you do something stupid, consider this. Their tweet about your banger, is that going to pay your medical bills?" And he wraps up by saying, "Do the right thing. Go in that ring with the intention of winning the match and leaving the ring the same way you entered it. Get the winner's purse and get out." I don't think anything that he said was bad. But I do have a problem with something, and it's not just the fact that he deleted it. Because let's be honest, you look at people like Sammy Guevara. You see the recent comments by Will Ospreay. You see El Hijo del Vikingo. And if you pay attention to what Conan says and other people say, you know, that guy, his career is not going to be all that long. Or he's going to have 50 surgeries coming along the way. You look at who MJF is talking about, his message is the right message. I go back to what I said at the very beginning of the show about Bandido. Tony Schiavone said tonight about Bandido, he said, Bandido is being more deliberate during the match tonight. And I think that's by design. because MJF saying this, look, just because MJF says it, or a veteran says it, or somebody in a wheelchair says it, isn't going to suddenly make someone change their wrestling style. You know, imagine MJF saying this and truly feeling it and sitting at ringside tonight and watching Sammy Guevara doing what he's doing. At the end of the day, MJF truly cares about Sammy Guevara. MJF does not want to see Sammy Guevara have an incident like Dante Martin or someone else. It's freak accidents. Shit happens. And yes, sometimes you could seriously injure yourself and do nothing. Indy Hartwell escaped a pretty serious injury yesterday. I have the footage. I'll show you in a moment. Here is one very, very, very big problem of what I feel MJF said. And I'm going to take a direction that no one else is. Think about the match tonight with Bandido and Orange Cassidy as a good example. Crowd was chanting, "This is awesome," at times. That was not following, you know, like doing some insane dives through tables, onto chairs and all that stuff. They were just doing some really flowing, fun, counteracting reverses, offense, defense. Everything flowed. And when it flows, it's awesome. It's fun. Think about the criticism. Think about the criticism amongst a lot of people within AEW, fans included, that will criticize the WWE style, that it's too soap opera, that it's not, it's too cinematic at times, with the exception of the Bloodline and Sami Zayn, everything else, you know, it's too core, you know, too organized. You look at wrestling ratings. It is almost never that a match that just has some great flow, tells a beautiful story, a lot of psychology, unless you do insane fucking spots where loads of furniture is destroyed and you do things that you and I would probably break our neck and be crippled over, if those matches are absent of those moves, they will never get rated 5 stars. They'll never get rated 4.5 stars. Like, you always add more because of these insane, unbelievable... Like, look at Vic Kano and Kenny Omega. I loved the match. To me, it was a video game match. To me, if I played a video game, that's exactly how the match would be. But Meltzer couldn't even wait 30 seconds to give it 5 stars, 6 stars, whatever it is. Because people are so mystified at what Vic Kano could do. People are so mystified of doing 630s through tables and jumping off of this and going through that. Mr. Friedman, the fans are not moving the goalposts. Orange Cassidy and Bandido tonight was beautifully accepted by the fans, and it did not do any of that insane life-threatening shit. The problem is that a lot of these wrestlers, their mentality is they got to be almost like they need stunt. They're like the stuntmen for the stuntmen. They have to do all this crazy insane stuff. And when you keep doing that, fans, it gets watered down. It gets immune. It's the analogy I always say when I was a kid watching horror films. My grandmother used to take me to horror films when I was 11 years old. I had fucking nightmares that I was even saying to myself, "Nanny, why are you taking me to see Zombie, Maniac? Why are you taking me to see these?" And after a couple of movies, didn't bother me anymore. When you see it over and over, and you listen, it's a bad, horrible example. When you see a lot of these serial killers out there, what do you hear happens more often than not? They start with animals, and then they get numb to the abuse with animals, and then it kind of segues into humans, and then you get numb to, you know, the what you're actually doing. So the wrestlers are the ones that insist that the only way they can have a 4.5, 5-star match, the only way that they can get the fans and go is to do this insane stuff. So now if you look at MJF's comments again, it's the reverse. The more the wrestlers hurt themselves, the more wrestling fans become bloodthirsty. It's the opposite in more ways than not. And you know why? Because Roman Reigns ain't doing that shit. Sami Zayn ain't doing that shit anymore. Kevin Owens ain't doing that shit anymore. And I'm only using them because everybody widely accepts that storyline and what they've been doing over the last year, especially. Wrestlers, Ricochet doesn't do remotely anything like he used to. AJ Styles, before he had his broken ankle, AJ Styles would hit 2-3 moves, a lot of retro stuff, but didn't do the stuff where people were like, holy shit, like unbelievable. Like, I have to, like, it's the wrestlers. What can I think of next? What can I do the next that is going to turn around and not only have these fans impressed, but they're going to be insanely like, what the fuck? What the fuck did this person just do? And that's what's going on. So in my honest opinion, no, it is not the fans that are moving the goalpost. It's the wrestlers that are doing it. They can't do it just on psychology alone. And no, I do not believe you go back to the age that Jim Cornette obviously loves. In 2023, you have to adapt. But you also have to think about 5 years from now, 10 years from now. You know, a lot of fans out there, you look at AEW, you look at the people that they sign, you look at the matches that are put out there. Does it feel at all? You know, does it feel at all? Before Jeff Hardy had his DWI arrest, did it feel at all that AEW, and I don't care if you're going to say to me, well, Jeff Hardy probably told Tony Khan, no, I still want to do this. I got to do this. And that. Does it ever feel that Tony Khan, for the benefit of the wrestlers, Sammy Guevara and others, have you ever heard of a meeting or anything else? Look, guy, you got to tone it down a little bit. We want you to be around in 5 years. No, instead, Commander does this insane stuff, and he's rewarded with he is all elite 5 minutes later. El Hijo del Vecchio does what he does, and everybody online is like, this is the greatest match I've watched in my lifetime. This is unbelievable. This is 7 stars, this and that. You know, it's the wrestlers that choose to put it out there, and they're trying to one-up each other. And in the process, the fans are like, hey, if you're going to do it, I'm going to fucking enjoy it. A lot of wrestlers don't do that. And for some weird reason, the fans still love it. You look at so many wrestlers that are now in their 30s and 40s that could actually still go. And what you will notice more time, even Rey Mysterio. Rey has had so many injuries in his career. If you really pay attention closely, Rey Mysterio does 2-3 things that are old school, but for the most part, Rey Mysterio is nothing of what he was in 1995. He was nothing like he was in 2005 or even 2015. He adapts, and the fans click. Rey Mysterio doesn't even have to leave his feet. If he does a 619, people are happy. They go home happy. So MJF's comments, they were deleted because the mindset within the wrestling industry, especially amongst the company he works for, the mindset is the opposite. What can I do in my match tonight that it's going to leave people talking about it for years? Look at Dante Martin and that move with that table. It's a freak accident. You feel horrible for Dante Martin. But what did people honestly say right after that spot? What the fuck were you expecting? Why would you even think about doing something like that? It's not like he was smoking or drinking and he wasn't in his right frame of mind. He's like, oh, look, a chair. Let's do this. No, they thought about it and planned it and probably practiced it and probably thought in his head, this is something that they will remember for years. Yeah, we will remember it for years. These wrestlers are the ones. See, when we go to a show, whether it's an indie show, an AEW show, a WWE show, wherever we go, we pay the ticket and we sit down. We have no fucking idea what kind of match we're going to get from some people out there. And you don't know the level of what they're going to do. You don't know about the offense. You don't know about, I mean, you have an idea of what the moves are, but you don't know how balls out somebody's going to go. Whatever the wrestlers give us, we take it and we accept it. If you felt, nah, they didn't do anything near what I, well, then you don't go back. You don't feel like you got your money's worth. That's fine. But when you show up there, there's no requirement that I must do this, I must do this, I must do this, I must do that. So MJF writing that yesterday insulted a lot of people within his own company because that's the mindset. What can I fucking do today to get that holy shit chant? Look at Sammy Guevara. Ass backwards with his thing. I'm not doing house shows because I can't do what I do. Instead of saying, okay, let me tweak some things so I don't have to do 630s through tables and the fans will still dig me. But for some wrestlers, it's a psychological high. It's an adrenaline rush. It is a chemical reaction. It is the thrill. Why do you think you see Darby Allin with all the thrill things? He used to jumping off bridges and going doing these things. Do you know last week was the anniversary where Jeff Hardy broke his leg in that dirt bike accident? And when it happened, what did we all say? Well, that was kind of this the footage of the jump and everything. People are like, what are you, fucking stupid? Why would you even do that? Especially, look at the other. Who was it Evan Bourne that, you know, did some crazy dive or something? And he broke both of his ankles. I don't remember if it was Evan Bourne, but somebody did. And when it happened, everybody was like, why did you do that? It's because of the adrenaline rush, the chemical reaction. It's the wrestlers that put it out there. And the fans are like, hey, if you're going to do it, I'm going to love it. And since you're doing it, hey, I want more. The wrestlers have to be the ones to make the decision of pulling back. And then if the fans don't like that, then too bad. That's just my opinion on it. I think MJF, what he said, is right. But to turn around and to open it up by saying the more wrestling fans become bloodthirsty for these dangerous feats in the ring, the more the wrestlers will hurt themselves. It's the opposite, my friend. It's the opposite. The more the wrestlers do this shit, the more the fans get thirsty. They're getting numb to it. When everybody bleeds, nobody bleeds. Britt Baker got hit with a couple of Singapore canes last week, and most of us were like, she fucking went through thumbtacks and this and all this. She had that crazy shirt. She had that match with Thunder Rosa and stuff. And we're supposed to, like, feel bad for a couple of Singapore cane shots? It's like, are you kidding me? You know, so it's the opposite. Justin Gabriel, was it him? Okay, Justin Gabriel. Thank you, Garth and Kevin. It was Justin Gabriel. If a lot of you out there don't know about the injury, just look it up. Justin Gabriel. All right. Let's move on. We got some good news about Trinity, the former Naomi in WWE. Will Naomi be in WWE in 2023? Yeah, I do believe so. It's interesting because we just had this conversation over the weekend. Remember this thumbnail that I put up, I think, on Saturday? No Stardom money for you, Trinity. No Stardom money for you. We'll give some to Mercedes, but not for you. We had a pretty deep conversation about Trinity over the weekend. And we were talking about that there was going to be, it's going to be almost like a come to Jesus moment. There was going to be almost a come to Jesus moment for Trinity that all these conventions, all these gatherings, autograph signings, walking a red carpet, movie premieres, where it's always Mercedes and Trinity, Trinity and Mercedes, there was going to become a moment where somebody was going to break the bank, no pun intended, to Mercedes. But when it came to Trinity, we want to, but we just don't have the money right now. And we said at some point she's got to look at herself in the mirror, and she probably did early on, and like, look, Trinity is awesome. And I missed seeing Trinity in the ring. Luckily, we won't have to miss her too much longer. I'll explain why in a moment. But the thing with her is she had to have known all this time that this was a fun ride. That, yeah, her and Mercedes did a powerful moment, stood up to WWE, told John and Laurinaitis, go fuck yourself. They walked out. They inspired some others. Maybe not the best way to do what they did, but still took a lot of balls to do that. But at some point, you know, Trinity looks at Mercedes like, okay, she's the one that's going to get the millions. You know, maybe I'll get one less zero. It has nothing to do with skin color or anything like that. It's just, you know, Sasha Banks over the years has been handled differently. You know, she had more opportunity, and unfortunately, Trinity did not get the opportunities that Mercedes did. It's never too late. But we said at some point, if Trinity wants to return to wrestling, she's going to have to accept something less. And right now with WWE doing a deal with Endeavor, when contracts come up for renewal, yes, it will be discussed. Yes, it has to be signed off by Endeavor. WWE is not going to go on a signing spree right now because they're in the midst of changing, you know, their structure. World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated will be no more. It will be anybody that's trying to get a lawsuit in for WWE has to do it now. They have to do it now. And by the way, that lawsuit that came out today about creative stuff, we will talk about it on Saturday. We will have plenty of time to talk about it on Saturday. I will be reading the whole thing. I've already seen a couple of things that doesn't pass the smell test. And a lot of it involved the 24/7 title. If you think about it, you know what I'm talking about already. But the thing is that Trinity is going to have to accept a little bit of humble pie and accept less. Impact Wrestling. Impact Wrestling, similar to Bronson Reed, similar to a few others, Bullet Club, Jay White. You think Impact Wrestling has this golden goose egg that they have millions upon millions of dollars just sitting, like, you know, for special occasions, break glass when needed? They get 100,000 viewers. They have to go on eBay and sell you 95 autographed photos for 10 bucks. They have to take tables and break it into 150 pieces to try to sell them autographed for $10. I've bought some of their things and given it away. Some people have gifted it to me. Impact Wrestling does not make the money that everybody thinks that it makes, but Impact Wrestling will do short-term deals, little spurts. That is what has happened with Trinity. This Friday in Chicago, this event is going down, and they are advertising it as a major surprise. Spring Slugfest, this Friday in Chicago. Trinity, the former Naomi, will be making her Impact Wrestling debut. That will be happening this Friday. She is signed for just a couple of appearances. This will remind you of, like, Bronson Reed. This will remind you of some people that came in from Japan. You know, as I've said before, there have been quite a few people that show up in AEW and people are like, oh my God, unbelievable. Holy shit, I can't believe this person's here. Well, you could have watched them almost every week for the last 2-3 months on Impact Wrestling and you chose not to. You know, it's funny, even tonight, I watched people that have done Rampage recaps. Think about this. I've watched journalists who have done Rampage recaps and watch-alongs and everything like that. And I saw at least five of them say tonight, why is Taya Valkyrie not allowed to use Jaded? Then you realize motherfuckers aren't watching it. They're just reading somebody else's results and just reacting to the results, not even paying attention to it. So there's been a lot of people popping up in Impact Wrestling for short periods of time that are getting work in, that are getting back into the swing of things, performing in front of a live crowd. And that's what's happening with Trinity. So she will be in Impact for a little while. She'll probably go up against Deonna Purrazzo. She'll probably go up against Jordynne Grace. Maybe if Mickey James returns from injury sooner than later, she'll have a little bit there. In the meantime, she's getting back in the swing of things. And look, her stock will go up because the focus is on her now. There's no other Funkadactyl. There's no Sasha Banks. There's no Uso. It is her. So the spotlight will be on her. This is really, if you think about it, she had that one match in WWE. What was it, against Charlotte? That they gave her some extra time and she nailed it, she killed it. Now, if she's given that extra time and Impact against some top names, believe me, when Naomi, when it's time that WWE can start focusing on deals, she will be back in WWE. She's expressed interest in returning to WWE. You just got to understand right now, the Endeavor deal, the numbers, the finance, you can't just start signing people like you used to. When contracts come up, Logan Paul is a perfect example. You know, the same week that people are like, hiring freeze, cannot open a bank for nobody, and they re-sign Logan Paul. Like, some deals will get done if they absolutely have to be done now. There was no ultimatum moment like, here's your chance, Vince. You get Jay White now, or you lose him for a couple of years. Here's your chance, Vince. Motherfucker, they got the bloodline. They got, you know, Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes, and everybody else. Do you think Jay White would be a game changer? Let's be honest with Cody Rhodes. Let's be honest. When he showed up a year ago at WrestleMania, after 3 weeks, those ratings were right back to what they were before he came into WWE. No one is, except for Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, for the most part, nobody is this insane needle mover that the WWE is going to sign them and suddenly they're going to have an extra 100,000 viewers because of that person. It's not going to happen. And you're not going to turn certain divisions, certain titles, certain contenders and put them on the back burner because this person's coming in and they have to get that opportunity instead of you. There is a fine balance that needs to be done. And if you see some of Triple H's signings after Vince let some people go, you realize how difficult that fine line is. There are quite a few people that Triple H have brought back that people are like, you know, wow, talk about a disappointment. It's not necessarily the wrestler's fault. It's just that when they come back, it's like, oh, yeah, you get 20 minutes a week. You get 20 minutes a week. Do what you can do. You get 15 minutes a week. Do what you do. Show everybody why you belong. No, it's not as easy as it goes. And think about the fact that WWE has so much more time to do these shows. Speaking of time, there's a lot of rumors. It is not official yet. Once it becomes official, I will let you know. AEW Elevation may be history. If you haven't paid attention, AEW has been doing Ring of Honor tapings at Dynamites. They've also done Rampage at Dynamites. And one of these other shows had to pay the price, and it seems more and more like Elevation will be going away for the time being. And I think that is very, very smart. There was no need to have two YouTube shows. You had, you know, Dark, Elevation, and then you got Rampage, and then you got Dynamite, and then you could have Collision. You know, you can't just, you got to tighten it up sooner or later. And I know that YouTube ad revenue for them is very important. But at the same time, though, you know, you got to build an honor club a little bit more. I mean, 10, 15, 17,000 subscribers, it's not a bad number right now. But, you know, when you take wrestlers off of your Dynamite and your Rampage and even your pay-per-views, I mean, you see how Samoa Joe has just totally disappeared and others, and you realize how much some of these people were used up until a couple of months ago. You know, they got to keep them off and resist the temptation of putting them back on the televised shows if they're going to be designated to just Ring of Honor or something else. That's why I say you watch when AEW Collision debuts. Saturday night, that is not a guarantee that they're going to draw 700,000 viewers, 800,000 viewers, a million viewers. You think AEW and WarnerMedia would be happy with 500,000 viewers for a show that might be headlined by CM Punk and FTR and maybe the return of Miro and others? You know, I mean, I know Tony Khan bleeds money, but you know, the ratings have to back it up. There ain't no way that these wrestlers are only going to be restricted, segregated. I like to use the word segregated to Saturday nights only. It's not going to happen. The idea that you're going to debut a show and the backdrop is, oh, these are wrestlers that don't get along with AEW management and the Elite and Jericho and this and that. And speaking of Jericho, let's throw this out there right now. Little bit of news, a little bit of rumor killer, then we'll start bringing this home. We've already talked about CM Punk showing up at Raw this past Monday. We talked about it on Monday night. Couple of things since then, some news and some rumor killing. Let's talk about the rumor killing first. It's pretty obvious, if you look at the video, without naming names, some journalists that are not in the good graces of CM Punk feel left out. They were totally left out as far as the meeting with Chris Jericho and Tony Khan and a few others in AEW this past Friday, because CM Punk did meet with all of them. they were left out in the cold. Some of these journalists are doing podcasts and videos, and you know, somebody showed me something today and said, DT, please watch the video without volume. And I was like, no, I want to hear what they say. No, you got to watch the video without volume. Trust me. You look at it, you would have thought that a mass tragedy happened. I'll just say it general. You would have thought it's a major tragedy. There was so much somber and sadness and depression, and it was all because CM Punk showed up at WWE. They were left out. And for some people out there, that is like the kick in the balls with heels on. And it's mind-boggling. For other journalists out there who never had sources, they had to double down with bullshit. Any areas that you read headlines, what Triple H and CM Punk talked about, who in your right mind out there do you think who doesn't get along with CM Punk suddenly knows what CM Punk and Triple H said to each other? And please don't say to me, well, it might have been a wrestler who was in the same room as these two guys. So you got a lot of these news sites that were left out in the cold with no exclusive, and they're teasing by saying what was said, what The Miz and CM Punk talked about, what Triple H said to CM Punk, what Vince McMahon trolled Triple H exactly. Nobody knows. Anybody that says that they know, unless it's the participants involved, are lying to you. Keep that in mind. It is a lie, plain and simple. They just couldn't accept the fact that they couldn't reveal anything. That's why the whole Collision Saturday show has turned into a complete clusterfuck. Because they couldn't just leave it that this person broke the story, this person revealed the start, this person revealed the network, this person revealed what they used CM Punk as the attraction, just like they used Chris Jericho to try to get networks to put Ring of Honor on their network. Because that's what happened with Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho was the Ring of Honor champion as the big name to pitch to Warner and others to put Ring of Honor on their network. And they said no. CM Punk being pitched to be put on this show, that's different. And that's why that happened. But the idea that it's going to be hostile and segregated and this and that, these are people that can't just report what someone else says. They got to put their stamp on it in some weird, perverted way so they feel like they're part of the conversation, and they're not. It's bullshit. So Fightful reported that Chris Jericho, Tony Khan, CM Punk, and a few other people within AEW have not been named as of yet, all met this past Friday in Florida. And the meeting was very cordial. There was no yelling, no anger. There was a lot of handshakes, and a lot was repaired in that meeting. They have come to a calm conclusion. And listen, that should not be weird for anybody out there, because of something that I've been saying on these shows for weeks now, if not months. You go back in the annals of wrestling history, there are tons of YouTube videos from everybody and their mother. People have done this hundreds of times over the years. The top 20 backstage brawls of all time. And you have even incidents with JBL and Joey Styles, and you have some that are even worse with, you know, Sid Vicious and Arn Anderson, or this, or, you know, you've had fights backstage. But when it comes to the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, it's like you would have thought that somebody wiped out their whole family. Oh, somebody was bitten. I have to do a Be in the Elite video, and I have to show off my bruise, and I have to, you know, I have to tease on the shows, and we have to, you know, play, you know, Jackass in the main event on a Dynamite to throw it in people's faces. These are immature babies that doesn't know what it's like to just have a, you know, a professional fight. You do it in a locker room, you keep it in a locker room. No, no. That's why as soon as that shit happened, you knew that some of those elite, coddled EVPs were going to run to their favorite media pigeons and put a narrative out there that was going to be 100% in their favor and 100% against CM Punk. That's why when CM Punk wanted to do business, wanted to amend things, look, we had a fight. It sucks. You know, we want to, at the end of the day, do what's best for AEW. For these other people, you would have thought that, you know, like somebody like, you know, just harm their family, that there's no repair. It's these are coddled children. If this was the 80s and the 90s and they showed up in an indie wrestling event or signed with another company and all they would talk about is the backstage fight, like CM Punk bit me or CM Punk, you know what a lot of these veterans would say? Grow the fuck up. People, some people fight. Shit happens. Fucking forget about it. Go get a beer. You know, go, you know, shut up. It's like, stop talking about it. And that's all these people online do. They have to bring this up and bring this up and bring it. And now they think that it's so dramatic that it'll sell out 90,000 seats. How's about grow the fuck up? We're adults. Some people fight. You move on. And that's what happened with Chris Jericho and CM Punk. Whether you like them or you don't like them, they are veterans. They have had fights. Remember Gorilla Position and Brock Lesnar back in the day with Jericho and stuff? Anybody remember that? You move on. You do what's best for business. You do what's best for yourself. You do what's best for your family. You do what's best because you're a professional. You show that, hey, sometimes you have to work with people that you don't like and you don't get along with, but you do it anyway because, unfortunately, in this world, you don't always get to eat or break bread or work with people that give you this warm kumbaya, everything is epic, amazing. I feel like I'm on a cloud. And that's why Jericho and CM Punk was so easy to, you know, clear some of the air. You're not going to clear all of the air in one meeting. Time will tell. As soon as the meeting is over, Jericho could go and stab him in the back. CM Punk could go stab him in the back. Now, after that meeting was over, when CM Punk grabbed the flight to go back to Chicago, WWE stars happened to be on the same flight. And that's what led to Monday. So those are the facts, and those are the rumor killers. And, you know, that is the latest on CM Punk. I appreciate everybody in the chat room, you know, because there are some of you out there that prefer just straight up honesty and not, you know, lead you on for 2, 3, 4 weeks. You know, it's a shame because that's what people need to depend on to get viewers and stuff. But that's all good. I try to give you straight up what I know, try to sift out the crap. Here's more crap to sift out. My friends, how many of you saw this last week? Took a sip of my water. Did this ever make my show? No, it didn't. For those that are on audio only, it's a picture of a seating map of Wembley Stadium. And this was all over the net for about 10 days of the setup that AEW is doing for All Out. All In, excuse me. And for those that can't see this photo, almost half of it is blacked out. Almost half, the whole left side is blacked out, and the opposite side has the seats. Everybody in the elite media were posting this seating arrangement. When I got a copy of this last week, I immediately went to Ticketmaster. I looked at the U.S. version, I looked at the U.K. version, I looked at the building, I looked at Wembley, I looked at it, and I said, where is this from? There is no backstage source in Wembley that snuck this out to somebody online. Shh, don't tell anybody. I couldn't find it anywhere. I said, nah, you know why? I think this is someone's assumption of what AEW is going to do. And people were doing shows that, oh, it's being set up for 35,000 to 40,000 seats. And I'm like, motherfucker, how's about finding out if this seating plan is even legit? Guess what, my friends? It was not legit. It was not legit. Never made my shows because I could not substantiate that it was real. Here is the actual seating plan for AEW All In. All the seats are available. As you will see, their price range goes from £1,500 all the way down to, I think, £30. And then they obviously have some family ticket plans. The most expensive seats are They're like equivalent to $1,800. And honestly, that sounds like a crazy amount of money, but look, tickets for Money in the Bank last year went for $4,000. You know, to get on the floor, you know, it's much, much different. Now, I will tell you this. The color of the seating plan is a little bit off. So some of you, depending on what type of screen you have, some of the colors may look similar. Like the floor is technically like an orange pink. But if you look at it, you almost feel like it's the same color as the P8, which is the Boondocks, which is about 40 euro. So depending on your screen, some of the colors may be similar. But this is straight from Ticketmaster. Tickets are about to go on sale. And again, as far as that pre-signing, I don't care if 500,000 people signed up for it. I signed up for it. I'm not going all in. And honestly, I don't have the extra cash for me to buy a bunch of tickets and then hopefully make some money on eBay or a secondary market. So just because people signed up, you know, I know quite a few of you out there who also signed up that live in Brooklyn. And you're like, I ain't buying no tickets. You know, we signed up because we wanted to keep updated, get information, kind of like fun to get the email like, hey, you could buy a ticket now. Maybe I could grab two tickets for £30 and then maybe sell it for 50 if I happen to get the first row in a section. Never know. But that is the actual seating plan. So, you know, I'm not saying this to toot our own horn, but as time goes by, you understand how hard it is to sometimes verify some of the things that come in. You know, and some people, even if they know deep down inside it is 1,000% bullshit, they will still run with it as a headline story because they know it's going to attract people to check it out. So that is the actual seating plan. We got to talk about the Dyad. They're done. I mean, unless something drastically changes, the Dyad are done with WWE and NXT. We had this conversation a month ago. The night of Stand and Deliver, we were baffled why Chase University and the Dyad, the Schism, was a dark match. And if you remember my recap of Stand and Deliver, I happened to turn on the pre-show 40 minutes early, and the match is on TV. And I'm like, wait, when did they fight in NXT to set up this match? And I realized, no, this is live. And after that match was over, they went on social media and posted a cryptic tweet talking about, you know, no matter, you know, if they're the beginning of the show, the dark match, the main event of this, they'll always be grizzled. And it felt like a swan song. It felt like that they were done with NXT. We found out that they requested their release. And then the following week, they're on NXT. Then the week after that, they're part of a three-way fighting Gallus for the tag titles. And if you remember, I paid a little tribute to them because I absolutely did not like the Grizzled Young Veterans at all early on. The one of them looked like a stunt fill-in for the Dark Order, and the other one looked like he was dressed up as Shawn Michaels for Halloween. You know, some old Attitude Era HBK. I never connected with them, and then for some reason, they just started growing on me. And I started liking them. And them leaving is definitely a blow for WWE. I can't understand why the Grizzled Young Veterans cannot make it on the main roster. I honestly think that, you know, look, obviously Vinci and Kaiser have Gunther. And, you know, the Grizzled Young Veterans of the Dyad do not. But they are still good enough that they can hang with the main roster, yet they never were given an opportunity. So up until last week, you know, we're under the impression, hey, maybe they work something out and they're going to stay after all. And unfortunately, yesterday, both members, Jagger Reed and Rip Fowler, who you also know as Zach Gibson and James Drake, they both went on social media and tweeted the same thing. Today, WWE denied our release, which was requested on April 3rd. On October 15, 2023, we will be free agents again. I personally want to thank all of our fans for your continued support. It means a lot to both of us, especially during times like these. We will see you on the 16th. So that is the deal. Now, you know, I kind of feel bad for Joe Gacy a little bit. Because remember, Joe Gacy had Parker Boudreau. And I thought they were a great pairing, and then Parker Boudreau got released. And, you know, look, you know, The Rock's daughter, it's going to take quite a while for her to really put it all together, and totally understandable, and it's not a criticism on her. But you know, you look at the Grizzly Young Veterans, you look at the diet, and you say to yourself, then there's no way you could say to me that they're not main roster ready. And for some reason, WWE, I don't know, maybe they don't want to go to the main roster. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. Hopefully, once they are gone from WWE, they open up a little bit. And maybe explain, you know, maybe they wanted to go to the main roster and WWE just felt that it wasn't going to work. Maybe it's the opposite. I think AEW probably is going to snatch them up. Only because of AEW's treatment and having so many people on the roster that, you know, it's just no consistency for a lot of people. That's the only thing that kind of hesitates me a little bit. But I also say to myself, you know what? I'd rather see somebody on TV every few weeks than not see them at all. As much as I don't like the treatment of Hobbs and Ricky Starks and several others out there, you know what? I'd rather see him on TV a little bit than not at all. You know, today, you know, we saw in Dynamite with Wardlow, you know, winning that squash match, and then Luchasaurus comes out there with Christian. As we said earlier, you know, like Tony Khan, because Luchasaurus returns, he wants him and Wardlow going at it. And this is a weekly stare down, and just and meanwhile, you know, why couldn't they just feud for no title? Because there wasn't enough time on the shows to have Hobbs defend the championship and have Wardlow set up a feud with Luchasaurus at the same time. Because, see, understand it like this. If Wardlow wins squash matches and he's not a champion, you'll have people out there that'll complain and say, why isn't this guy fighting for the heavyweight title? Why is he not fighting Hobbs for the championship? And some point you got to give. But then Luchasaurus shows up, and they're not brawling with each other. They're just staring at each other. So, you know, you remember the last time when we had, was it Miro? Was it Miro staring at Malakai Black? And people like, oh my God, Miro's going to join the House of Black. And that night we were left like, this makes no sense. There was just a nod and a stare down and like, well, that really made no sense. So Wardlow being the champion, now Luchasaurus could come down there and just stare at him and you're like, oh, well, I guess he wants his championship. And Arn Anderson trying to cover it up today with his promo, but really it didn't do much. Yes, another week. He redeemed another week. He redeemed another paycheck. All right. Rampage this Friday starts at 5:30 in the afternoon. Sean Spears and Ricky Starks versus Jay White and Juice Robinson. Naturally Limitless will be in action. Anna Jay versus Ashley D'Ambois. See, I like saying D'Ambois. Some people say D'Ambois, something like that. The Acclaimed and Billy Gunn will talk, and the Outcast will talk. Next week on Dynamite, the Four Pillars have the tag matches. We said Cash Wheeler versus Jay Lethal will be next week. I thought it was going to be Rampage Friday. It's actually next week. And Orange Cassidy, Bandito, Adam Cole, and Roderick Strong versus Jericho Appreciation Society. Yesterday, spring break-in. Indy Hartwell escaped a major injury. She's very lucky. I will tell you that she still went to the doctor today to make sure nothing even was slightly torn. I'll show you it in a second. Match results from yesterday. Tony D'Angelo and Stacks over Pretty Deadly in a trunk match. And the trunk match ended up being exactly what we thought it was. If you remember, we said that today's cars, the trunks are way too small to fit both members of Pretty Deadly. So they took a vintage car and they end up dumping him in the river. And I think Pretty Deadly's on their way to the main roster. Kevin and I had a nice discussion yesterday about Pretty Deadly getting drafted to the main roster. Bron Breakker over Andre Chase. That was the only match that I ended up getting wrong. I thought we would get a pleasant upset in Andre Chase getting the win and then maybe Bron Breakker destroying him afterwards, but that did not happen. Cora Jade over Lyra Valkyria. Carmelo Hayes retained the NXT Championship over Grayson Waller. Josh Briggs and Fallon Henley over Brooks Jensen and Kiana James. Obafemi made his debut being Oro Mensah, and the match was pretty good. He impressed me. He's got something. You know, it's going to take a little while, but he's got something. And Indy Hartwell retains her women's championship, beating Roxanne Perez and Tiffany Stratton. There was one very scary moment. I'm going to show it to you on the screen. And I put it in slow motion so you can just look closely. Now, Tiffany Stratton is jumping off the top rope and diving to the outside of the ring onto Roxanne Perez and Indy Hartwell. And as she lands, look very closely at Indy Hartwell's right foot. Pay attention to it right now. See it? Ooh, her foot just buckles. Let me see if I could rewind this. What? Look at her foot as she goes down. Look at her right foot as it goes down. I'll see if I could slow this down a little bit further. Just look at her right foot as it goes down. Right there. She got up, started selling it immediately. Dijak posted a tweet about how she was no-selling it in a locker room and really putting her over as a very tough son of a bitch. Now, she was able to finish the match and looks like she escaped some serious injury, but WWE still had her get an MRI today to make sure that nothing was torn whatsoever. It's possible she was scheduled to get an MRI today. If there was any swelling, they may have to wait a little bit. Because sometimes, I don't know if any of you out there ever like rolled an ankle and you're fearing that you might have broke something. So you know, you want to go for an MRI and the doctor will say you got to wait for the swelling to go down first, then get the MRI. So it's possible that she did not go today. I would think there's got to be some swelling involved. Ankles just don't bend like that. She is very, very lucky that she did not break her ankle. But you see, she's just standing there waiting to take a dive, and she almost broke her ankle. She wasn't doing any crazy move. Shit could happen from the simplest of things. It's always risk. There's always tremendous risk. That's why what we said earlier about MJF, I think is, you know, it's a shame that he had to delete it, but you kind of understand why he had no choice to. But that's a conversation that is going to continue for many, many days, months, and years to come. Very interesting that it took MJF to say that. Plus, you kind of say to yourself, wow, MJF trying to offer advice, sincere advice for people out there? Got to give him a little credit for that. So, yesterday's spring break and did 647,000 viewers. That is up from last week's 565. I have an apology to give all of you because even I will mix up dates. I told you all last Tuesday that last Tuesday's episode of MLW Underground was their last on Reels. I made a mistake 2.5 months ago. I didn't realize my mistake until yesterday. 2.5 months ago, 10 weeks ago, we got the word that Reels was not renewing MLW Underground as of right now. The ratings were a fraction of what they thought it was going to be. If you remember, we talked about it that for 5 weeks straight, MLW pulled all of their advertising. Reels pulled all of their advertising for MLW. I watch On Patrol Live. I watched some other Reels programming. They pulled all of their advertising. Nobody reported it. Everybody tried to make it seem like, oh, no, they're negotiating future deals. Yeah, bullshit. That lawsuit that they're having with WWE is not pleasant for Reels because Reels just inked the deal with Peacock. You can now watch On Patrol Live on Peacock. You can now watch anything that's offered on Reels on Peacock. with the exception of MLW Underground. Because World Wrestling Entertainment programming is on Peacock, anything wrestling that's on Reels cannot. MLW Underground is the only show on Reels that cannot air on Peacock because of the deal with WWE. So there's a lot of reasons why Reels is not happy with MLW right now. Plus, Reels is probably worried if they treat them bad, they have to worry about getting sued for any stupid reason. Well, 10 weeks ago, when I was told that MLW's deal is going to end in 10 weeks, I interpreted that it was 10 episodes and done. At that time, there was only 3 or 4 episodes of MLW that had aired, because it makes sense, because now we're 6 weeks since MLW pulled their advertising was pulled on Reels. What I made the mistake 2.5 months ago was I thought it was a 10-week deal, and that was it. It was not a 10-week deal. It was actually like a 13-week deal. It was 10 weeks after the announcement. So that's why 2 weeks ago I said that was the swan song for MLW. Fact is, yesterday was MLW's last episode, I believe. As of this coming Tuesday, reruns of the reality show Jail will not only be on Reels on Tuesday night at 10, it will also be on Peacock. Peacock is already advertising. They couldn't wait. They're advertising reruns of Jail on Reels and Peacock starting Tuesday. What I will tell you is that Reels is still interested of having MLW on their channel in the future, but they're not going to just put them on random. MLW would not accept that as well. They either want a deal or they don't want a deal. What it's being compared to, and I don't know how this is going to jive, Reels is looking at MLW similar of what Lucha Underground was. Remember how Lucha Underground had seasons? They're trying to work out something where maybe MLW has seasons also. But the difference is Lucha Underground did their shows as if there were seasons. What would happen with MLW is, let's say they're doing an event in Philly this weekend. 3 months from now, they're going to have another major event somewhere, anywhere. What they are thinking of doing is that 3 month span between, let's say, an event this weekend and another event 3 months from now, MLW will put it together like a season. They will take a chunk of their regular shows and try to turn it into a 3 month storyline for some people. That is why for the final MLW Underground, it feels like a culmination. I don't want to say it's a WrestleMania, but it feels like a culmination of some recent feuds. So that would be interesting, because if Reels does work out something like that with MLW, I could see MLW signing some people for 3 months. You know, I don't know how long Trinity's deal is with Impact Wrestling, but it's not for a year. It is for much shorter than that. In fact, would not surprise me if Trinity is restricted that she can't work anywhere else. I just don't think Trinity is going to go to the indie circuit. I'd be very surprised if Trinity, maybe she works 1 or 2 other indie shows out there if they're big enough and they are willing to pay it. But I don't see Trinity working that many shows outside of Impact. But MLW, if they can work out a deal with Reels like it's a Lucha Underground, that every year there's a couple of months of MLW, maybe they can, you know, dish out a little bit of extra money to bring somebody in just for 3 months. I mean, fans won't know. Maybe they could work out a 6-month deal and keep them around a little bit longer. But that is what's going on with MLW. Straight up, no clickbait, no, you know, bias. That is what's going on right now. So, all right. I see one super shout out came in early. I'd like to shout out this gentleman and Sticky Fingers Frank. DT, I hope you got my message about the Matt Riddle prizes. Yeah, I did see it tonight. I got your email. And kudos for calling Roddy's release. I think you are the only one that did. I'm a little surprised that I just think that people just didn't care. Suddenly tonight, everybody cared about Roddy Strong debuting in AEW, but they didn't care about Roddy Strong for a very long time. And look, you blame that on WWE a little bit. You know, they really didn't do much with him in Diamond Mine for the longest. So I can't blame people out there to really, like, lose the radar. But Kevin and I were talking about Roderick Strong yesterday, and I said on the show yesterday, I'm like, from what I was told, he's released. He's done with WWE. And people were shocked at, like, when was he released? I've been told for a couple of weeks now he's been gone. So, but, yeah, I might as well tell you all now, even though this is related to the Monday shows, and tonight is not WWE related, but I'll share with you. Frank won the contest Monday for the Matt Riddle signed photo, signed card, and signed hat. And he sent me a very nice email saying that he appreciates the prizes, but he is not the biggest Matt Riddle fan, and he wants me to give the prizes to somebody else. Now, I emailed him earlier today to see if he wants something else in place of it, but that will be put back in the kitty. Also, that Dominic Mysterio autographed rookie card from a couple of weeks ago, unfortunately, the person that won that never claimed their prize. That will be put back in kitty as well. So we will be setting up some prizes in the very near future, and we'll definitely get a mix it in with the audio side of things, because you know, the audio side is, let's be honest, is about 85 to 90% of everybody who tunes into my stuff. And you know, I know we do a lot of video related contests, but we got to start doing them on the audio side as well, so look out for that. With that said, I'm looking at my notes to see if there's anything else we need to get into, and I don't believe that there is. Yeah, we got into everything. So, very important. I don't want to start talking about it tonight because then I'll yap for an hour. Saturday morning's episode of the Don Tony Show, I will talk about this WWE lawsuit that was filed. It's somebody who was part of WWE Creative until last year. This person was terminated, and it's definitely important. I know this sounds ridiculous, but it's definitely important that I point out to you that this person is black. And the reason why I'm saying that is because this person is accusing a lot of racism amongst WWE Creative. And there's some very wild examples that were posted. Some of them I believe. Some of them I find hard to believe, but I will say this right now, just to set this up for Saturday. There is one name in WWE Creative, and this person might be like the vice president of SmackDown, or I don't know what his actual role is right now. Anybody in the chat room remember his name? Post it, because I can't remember his name right now. Was it Crawford or something like that? If you are interested and you start looking into this lawsuit, as I have, there's one name that keeps coming up more than anybody else. And this person sounds like the biggest piece of shit. Makes John Laurinaitis come off as an altar boy. With the, you know, we're not talking about John Laurinaitis' pee-pee right now. We're just saying, like, just attitude, tastefulness. Yes, WWE is an entertainment company. Yes, it is storyline. Yes, it is soap opera. And yes, TV shows, movies, you know, cinema do give us content that is very distasteful. You have movies that would be racist, movies that would be terroristic things, movies that would be this. Because we are hardcore wrestling fans, we don't want that within wrestling. We feel that it bleeds down to the talent not being treated properly. So the reason why I say all this is that somebody who is black might take extra offense to somebody else in the company who is black and being stereotyped or being pitched storylines that kind of goes racial. So you could use the same storyline, like you could put a hockey mask on Karrion Kross's face, or you could do something stupid and give somebody a stereotype that's a white person, but if you do it to a black person, lawsuit. So it's, I have to be very careful how I read these papers. But the reason why I'm saying this now is because, and nobody seems to know this person's name. Nobody's posted it yet. But this person that's in creative, that seems to be the person who came up with some of these outrageous things, something about Mansoor saying he was part of 9/11. Mansoor would have been in diapers during 9/11. You know, it's like Angel Garza apparently would have been like Muslim or something. There's some off things about it. Reggie being chased like prey by Shane Thorne, and he was going to be like Crocodile Dundee, but instead of chasing crocodiles, he's chasing a black person. Like that, all I kept thinking about was everybody chasing Reggie for the 24/7 title, and Reggie, because of his acrobatics and his Cirque du Soleil, like that was his character. Like he just jumps and dives and gets, like everybody's trying to catch him to take the title. But apparently this creative guy, like a lot of his ideas went racial. They didn't end up racial on TV, but they originated racial. Mustafa Ali requesting his release. His timeline coincides with this. But the reason why I'm saying this, and still nobody's posted this guy's name. In fact, you know what? It would be disrespectful for me to go off the air without looking it up myself. WWE, see how easy it is? WWE lawsuit, racist, creative. Let's see if the name comes up. Let's see. Brittany Abrahams is the person suing WWE. And the name of the creative person, wow, you mean to tell me these articles are not even putting this guy's name as well? That's kind of like proving what I'm about to say. All right, let me look. I'm looking a little bit further. Okay, let's see. I'm finding the name. Wow, nobody's posting this guy's name. Wow, this is kind of proving what I'm about to say. All right, I'm not going to post his name. Everybody's singling out Vince McMahon. What blows me away is as I read this lawsuit, and there's like 40 pages that I've looked through so far, there's one person in creative that is brought up over and over and over again. This person cracked jokes about 9/11. This person cracked jokes about Bianca Belair. This person cracked jokes about Reggie. This person cracked jokes. But yet everybody is writing Vince. I just Googled it and found a bunch of articles. And the first three I clicked on, they don't even name this writer. That guy should be removed. That guy should step down. From what I've read so far, that guy should be removed or some disciplinary action in some way, shape, or form. But yet everybody, and even the journalists I just looked up, they're all citing Vince McMahon. And honestly, I think that is terrible. Not because I'm defending Vince McMahon, but you're not even calling out the person who is the alleged racist here. Because honestly, this creative guy, he's a white guy. I've seen pictures with him with facial hair, without facial hair. Like, this is the guy that's coming up with all this stupid shit. And yet everybody that's writing about it refuses to address his name. They just say Vince McMahon. And I think that's terrible. That guy should, his name should be plastered everywhere. Nobody even in the chat room has even posted it. And I've talked about this now for 10 minutes. So I will do my research. And on Saturday, we will talk about it. I will tell you my honest opinions on it. I will say this. It's going to be really interesting to see if any of the wrestlers themselves make any comments about it. Because honestly, like Bianca Belair, for example, I think she's been treated tremendously well. I wonder if she's going to be forced into silence because, you know, she's not going to jeopardize her position. You know, I just wonder now how this affects interviews in the future. Because some of these individuals, WWE's going to Saudi Arabia. Mustafa Ali is going to be interviewed. Bianca Belair does interviews all the time. This now is going to be probably the biggest topic of conversation in a lot of these interviews. And I think a lot of these people, unfortunately, may be forced to keep silent about it. And that kind of sucks. Because if they were treated like shit or if they were stereotyped, now you see this person is like in an executive position. Why is this person still in that company? So I will review everything. I will refresh my memory of WWE Creative in 2021, which was during COVID, mind you. I will remember some of the specific incidents. And like I said, I already started thinking about Reggie's 24/7 run. And a lot of this coincides with Reggie. And some of it, yeah, I look at it and I'm like, wow, that is kind of fucked up. But I also look at some of it too and I'm like, well, you know what? It might be interpreted as racist if the person, you know, like in creative is the same ethnicity as the person that they're at. My point is that I think this creative guy was just a piece of shit dirtbag that came up with some awfully stupid comments. Some of them tongue-in-cheek humor that was not fucking funny. 9/11 is never a joke. And even if it was in jest, oh, let's say he was responsible for 9/11. Why would you even say something like that? So I'm kind of confused as to how this guy still has the position that he's in. But you know what? Look at it like this. Once Endeavor and World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated merge, some people are going to be out of a job. They will not need as many people as they did before. Endeavor is going to put some of their own executives in WWE. So this guy may end up out of a job anyway. In fact, the more I read into it, I think the more I feel that this guy's job is not secure. Would not be surprised if that guy's out of a job sooner than later. Even if this lawsuit goes nowhere. It's an entertainment company. You can be distasteful. You know, you could come up with very, very distasteful storylines, sexist or whatever. It's an entertainment company. But if individuals are being treated differently because of race or gender or, you know, sexual orientation, then that's grounds for lawsuit. So I want to read this thoroughly and give you my honest conclusions from it. Not going to just jump the gun and say, you know, fuck Vince and fuck this and fuck that and that's fucked up and doesn't. I got to look at it a little bit closer. So, all right, everybody, I'm out of here. Much love. If you enjoyed tonight's show, you know what to do. If you know anyone else out there that would like the channel, and don't forget DonTony.com. Seriously, if you do it for convenience, download the audio episodes. They help this, everything that I do, 1,000 times more than you would ever know. Especially, like I said, since 90% of my audience is just on the audio side. And if you want a good way to kick off the audio side of things, go check out the WWE draft preview and predictions that Kevin and I did yesterday. We may come back in 2 weeks and review the draft, and we may even do our own little mock draft, and then everybody will vote as far as whose roster was the best, Don Tony's, Kevin Castle's, Raw, or SmackDown. So, and I will make a prediction. I usually don't make predictions like this about us. I think Kevin and I are going to get 90 to 95% of our predictions in this draft correct. And we ran down the entire WWE roster. We almost forgot Baron Corbin, but we picked up on it at the very end. Every single person on that roster, we gave our thoughts where they were going to go. I think we're going to end up being 90 to 95% correct. There was a point yesterday, we were halfway through the show, and I was getting DMs from some people in our Patreon family who were live that were like, DT, there hasn't been one pick that you and Kev have said that I have disagreed with yet. That's how things fit so perfect. The one that I want to see more than anything is I want to see Gunther on Raw and I want to see Theory on SmackDown. That's the one more than anything because I think everything else falls in place. Seth Rollins stays on Raw, Cody Rhodes goes to SmackDown, and it's funny because it just runs down the line and you segue into Riddle and the Usos and this and that. And then you're like, wow, now you see like how everybody ends up. Drew McIntyre here and Sheamus there and this. In fact, even Ronda Rousey, we think Ronda Rousey versus Bianca Belair is going to be the feud of the summer amongst the women's division. I know a lot of people are not going to like that, but when you see how we ended up and where we think Shayna Baszler ends up with this, some people are going to be surprised. if that happens, what we came up with, I think that'll be something people will remember years from now. But we had a lot of fun yesterday doing that. It's about a 90-minute episode. And, yeah, go check it out. So, everyone, be well. Saturday morning, 11:05 p.m., I will be right back here doing your Don Tony show. And we'll get into things besides the lawsuit, because it will be the day after night one of the draft. The draft is happening this week. So Saturday we will recap first half of the draft. We'll see if we have some bragging rights or not. So much love, everybody. I catch you all again soon. Be well and stay safe.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.